Welcome back, guys. DGS, happy Tuesday to you. Every Tuesday at 4 p.m., we do the Think Tank. Today we have Mike Elam, Braxton Payne with us. This is not the way I intended to start this segment, but on the break, I went back and I just popped up Drudge, and one of the top two stories are about RFK Jr. And I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but given what happened with Biden the other night, maybe RFK is popping his head up a little bit more. And the stories are RFK ate dog while in Korea, and there's a picture of him holding up a roasted dog, literally, and that he sexually assaulted a babysitter.
Yeah.
So they've been sitting on that one for a while.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the 20, his guest of the babysitter was 23 years old, and he was in an interview, and he said, you know, he didn't deny it. He said, oh, well, I had some skeletons in my closet. And that's how he answered the question when asked if he sexually assaulted. So I'm just like, I watched that, you know, just that 10-second clip literally about an hour ago. And I was like, that's your denial? Oh, I have skeletons in my closet? And then you essentially just say, yeah, that's something that happened.
How many states is he even on the ballot?
Oh, God, I don't even know, because a lot of them haven't even verified, you know, the signatures or that part yet. I think he's on the ballot, like, in Michigan. I think it's Maine, Massachusetts, some of these states, but
there's
I don't know how many.
Handful.
No, and that's why he wasn't included in the debates, is because he wasn't qualified for in so many states. It was one of the reasons that he wasn't allowed on the debate stage.
Stephanopoulos seems to be the place where Biden goes when things don't go well for Biden.
And, well, he is friendly.
And
I mean,
he's doing a Friday interview with him. It will not run live, no shock, but it'll run on the Friday night ABC News, and then again on his show, and then again on something else over the weekend. So that'll be interesting. That'll be the first long-form interview that he's done since the debacle of debate night. Braxton, how did that one affect you?
I'll be honest, I didn't watch it. I watched the Nickelback documentary instead on Netflix. Highly recommend.
They were similar.
That one's like, why does everybody hate Nickelback? And this one's like, why does everybody hate Joe?
So I did watch the full thing afterwards. It's no surprise. It's what irritates me the most is Democrats have had this problem for several years now. There's a D.C. normal America disconnect. As Democrats have gotten more of the upper income, higher education voters, they've started only talking to them and not really talking to what I would consider the majority of Americans. Mm-hmm. And that is a DC problem. DC consultants, DC, you're in this vortex. You only see what's on in Virginia and Maryland. You're not seeing what's going on in a place like Milwaukee.
That's a good point.
In a place like Grand Rapids. I see this as that is a problem, because what's going on with the debate, obviously we all know it wasn't great, but then even the response to it and how we're kind of going to get out of it is not great. I watched Joe Biden's rally the next day among supporters, obviously a great base, a very enthusiastic crowd, in my opinion, and by a lot of people on the right, too. He did a great job there.
Different guy.
And where was it? And there's a lot of reasons that we can speculate on to why that is. But my frustration is with, I mean, we hear it in political ads all the time. DC insiders think this and they think they're better than you. It's becoming a problem. And I don't see how
more
we
so
can get
left,
out of
think?
It. Oh, yeah, definitely, because the D.C. insiders that are Republican do not want Trump, and they never did. And I think they lost that argument and lost control of that.
And that's kind of his thing. He's more concerned with appealing in Grand Rapids than he is in D.C.
Right. And as somebody that works in the political space, we see a lot of times as consultants are just out to make their buck and they don't really care. And if they sometimes will, you know, they're going to lose an election, but they'll see, oh, this is an opportunity to make more business the next election cycle. That doesn't happen all the time, but I do see there's just a disconnect in messaging, especially a lot of my work is with union members.
Right.
And I'm seeing just a disconnect with the message that is even from sometimes in D.C. and the union leaders in D.C. and how we can actually message it here. Our local leaders, in my opinion, are doing a great job messaging to our members. But it's becoming discerning and just annoying to me that I can't, like, I just want to, like, go to D.C. and just shake some of these offices.
Yeah, I get that. Mike, as a solid Republican and conservative, was it a happy night for you, or did it make you more sad just as a human?
I think you had both. I mean, from a conservative standpoint, it was amazing. You're just going, thank you, God. I don't know what I did to deserve this, but I'll take it. I mean, people who were not Donald Trump fans came away from that and said, okay, these are my choices. I'm going Trump because there's no way I'm voting for that. I don't know what that was, but Trump's best line, in my opinion, of that whole debate was when Biden finished that one ramble and Trump just said, I don't know what he just said at the end, and I don't think he does either. And that just really encapsulated what that debate was from a conservative standpoint. From a human standpoint, it was sad. And I really believe, after watching all this stuff now, that I'm putting Joe Biden in charge of all these things. And I'm really starting to feel like she is, you know, they used to talk about Hillary Clinton was the power behind Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is that on steroids. I think Joe Biden is the power behind Joe. They've been together over the years. Joe has faded. Jill has not. Jill has found, hey, I like this. Talking about everything wrong with D.C., she is that D.C. insider. She lives for the lifestyle, the fame, you know, people paying attention to her. And she needs Joe to be relevant for her to be paid attention to.
I have no reason to say this, but just my gut vibe. But I feel like if Jill were to say to him, honey, you are my champion. You are the country's champion. You've done enough. Let's step aside. Let's let the next generation take it. I think he would be relieved.
I think she's the only one who could, and I agree with you. If she said, hey, Joe, you've done enough, right? You've given 50 years of service to this country. Let's ride off into the sunset, and we don't need this. Because mm-hmm. they really don't.
They don't.
They really don't need this.
No.
But she's not going to do that. And then they're talking about how Hunter is there in his ear saying, no, Dad, you gotta
Wheels?
Stay in.
He's joined all of the White House briefings now. I know what a fan of Hunter you are, so.
Yeah.
How do you not have more common sense to be like, all right, again, I think I said this the other day, like, I love my son, love him, he's one of my favorite people on earth, but you cannot be around me and be a part of the process.
Yeah.
You cannot be a part of, like, the crew of people advising me with everything that's hanging over. You just can't do it.
Yeah, the frustration maybe among Jill and probably definitely among the administration and people that I've talked to is that Joe Biden has not got the credit he deserves for the things he's done. The bipartisan infrastructure law, the CHIPS Act, bringing back manufacturing jobs that have been insane, some of the lowest unemployment. We've seen record job growth. Those are things that I know Democrats, me too, I'll count myself as one of them, that are very frustrated with because of a lot of times the media spin on his age and how he's unfit for the presidency. And that, fair enough, we can talk about that. But we also, when the jobs numbers, I just remember when the jobs numbers before COVID, Donald Trump, and he had the record, we're talking about the stock market every day. This radio station, stock market's hit record high. We're hitting record highs continuously, and that's not leading the top of the hour news anymore. And it does during a Republican presidency. You saw it with George W. Bush. I mean, you kind of saw it drop off with Barack Obama. It's just kind of how that happens. And we can go into conspiracy theories, but corporations do control most of the media, and they benefit the most on a lot of times Republican tax policies.
So my going into it, I had said all the way up to it that it was Biden needs to appear not old, and Trump needs to appear not unhinged,
right.
And I think they both failed. Do you think that Trump did a nice job? Now, I'll give you this before you answer. I don't think it's because Trump is kind or kind-hearted, but he took it easy on Joe. He could have leveled it and probably ended it right there had he said something like, I'm sorry, should we continue? I mean, he could have said it was that bad. He could have said, in good conscience, I don't feel like I can continue. He didn't do that.
Right. I think Trump did for that debate for Trump. I think he did fantastic. I was over the moon happy with him until they got to the golf score at the end.
Sure. That was embarrassing for everyone.
That was just like, really? Okay. I can't believe this is part of the discussion. But the first part of that, as bad as Biden was, I thought Trump was good. He stayed on his talking points. He didn't take the bait on some of the things that he could have gone down a road that he didn't want to go down. But he kept coming back to the points that were good for him. And he was hammering away at those points. And I thought he did really well. Because at the end of the day, neither one of these guys needs to introduce themselves to anybody.
Right.
We all know who they are. And I agree with you. They both had a pretty low bar of what they needed to get done. And I thought Trump did it better than Biden. I've never seen that bad of Biden. But what's funny now, you were talking about all the things the Biden administration has gotten done. And I would tell you, the problem for Joe is, I don't think anyone right now believes Joe had a hand in any of that. I think what people are seeing now, because you had the Carl Bernstein interview that's come out now, and him talking about over the last year and a half, behind closed doors, everybody's been talking about the fact they have seen this Joe over and over and over and over again. But I'll give you one thing. For 81, the guy is killer on a teleprompter. You put a teleprompter in front of him, and he kills it. The problem is you take the teleprompter away, he's lost. He has no idea where he's going. And you've seen these incidents where people want to, especially in the Democrat side, they want to push it to the side. But, you know, the turnaround, shake a hand with no one who's there. Where am I going? I'm wandering on the stage. And the facial expressions of, you can tell when you look at someone. My dad's 91. He's a great guy. I don't want him running the country. And he loses track of thoughts in the middle of a conversation sometimes. And he'll say, I don't know what I was saying. I was in the middle of that, and we'll just have to move
on. It gets us all.
He's like, it'll come back to me, right? That's where Joe's at, for better or for worse. And I don't fault him for it. But I do fault the people who have been around him this time, and they have known it. And they have continued to cover it up and cover it. I mean, Saturday Night Live even had that skit last year where they talked about, well, but behind closed doors, Joe is, you know, he beat me in arm wrestling the other night. You know, he's just killing it. And now we know, okay, you've been keeping that from the American people for a really long time.
Let's take a break and come back and talk about the immunity case with Trump and what that means long term. 422 DGS. Going to hand over to Cardinal pregame after this segment of the Think Tank with Mike Elam and Braxton Payne. So the immunity case that came out yesterday is complicated and thorny, and so many different opinions and dissents and so forth and so on. At first, it didn't bother me at all. In fact, I said yesterday, like, I don't think there's anything to see here. There's always been qualified immunity. There's always been this kind of immunity, and the official acts and unofficial acts. This sounds very much like law school for me in 1988. I don't see what the big deal is. But then when I really dug into it and read some good think pieces about it, they really did craft it, whether this was crafted as a favor to Donald Trump or it's just simply one of the happenstances of it. They have made it so incredibly difficult to prosecute or hold liable a sitting president. And the conservative majority may lament this because we're going to go back to, you know, Democrat presidents at some point after Trump is done, if he wins the next one. But, for example, an official act has always been, you know, given immunity. An unofficial act is not. But now, if you, Mike, President Elam, engages in some sort of, don't get any ideas, engages in some sort of unofficial act.
Can we start a county executive and work from there? That'd be great.
The Warnock was a preacher.
It's true.
It's become very difficult to hold these men and women liable. How does it hit you?
I'm kind of with you. When this first thing came out, I thought, what's the big deal? Like, I've never thought of us being able to charge a president for anything that they've done. I've never heard of that. And I've always just worked under the assumption, again, communications degree, not law degree, so different level of legal knowledge here. But I never thought about our presidents being tried for something like that. If you're doing something while you're president, and if you have to think about the fact of, crap, when I get done, I could go to jail. And before Trump, that was never a thought in my mind. I have disagreed with presidents over the years. I was not an Obama fan, as you might imagine, right? Mm-hmm. But I never thought about sending him to jail just because I didn't think that's good for the country. But now we've gotten to that point where I legitimately think you have people who want to send the opposition to jail. So to me, I thought, this just makes sense. And I think the bigger part is to what you just talked about.
But no one wanted to send Bush to jail.
Well, some people wanted to send Reagan to jail. But that,
I mean, if Obama had denied the outcome of an election, how would people have reacted to that?
But we weren't going to send the guy to jail.
Well, if he broke the law.
I don't think that was, but I think it goes to, it's a two-sided coin, right? What's good for the goose is going to be good for the gander at some point. You're going to have a Democrat there. And I think we need to give the president the leeway to be the president. Whether you're Democrat or whether you're Republican, if you're the president, you need to have the confidence that you're going to be able to make the decisions that you need to make. I mean, Obama droned people and killed people who were American citizens. and actually droned them.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't send him to jail. And that's one of those, because it was an official act. But that's one of the kind of things that you were told you could never do. You can, a president can never kill an American citizen. You can't target them like that. But yet he did. But we didn't try to send him to jail. So I thought this ruling was good. And I think it's a ruling that you need to have to allow a president to be a president. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you need to have that.
Yeah, we've said this since I was born, is, you know, no one is above the law. We've always said that there shouldn't be two types of justice systems in this country. And I feel like this ruling has set that up to, hey, the Supreme Court has signed off on that. And like you said, it should be the same for a Democrat, should be the same for a Republican. I always think back to this one speech, and I know many people can dislike her. That's fine. But Hillary Clinton in 2016, she was in Phoenix, Arizona. The theme of her speech was the threat to democracy that Donald Trump poses. And in that speech, she talked about a long list of things, but she said that our judicial system will be under attack and every single system that we've ever had will be changed forever and not in a good way. So I'm summarizing there, but that's what she said. And I continue to go back to that speech. And obviously, she was right in a lot. And one of the things that Trump was able to do was able to have a Supreme Court that is friendly to him. Now, do I think that sometimes these Supreme Court justices do things for politics? Sure. But do I still have faith in the institution? I'll be honest. I do.
I do too.
Because
do too.
It's something that as you grow up and but, you know, 70, it used to be 85% of Americans had, you know, supported the Supreme Court. Now it's at 60, and it continues just to go down and down and down. And if we continue to have these types of rulings and they take on these types of cases, we're going to see, I think, the institution erode. And I think that is just to Donald Trump shook up the system. And a lot of people wanted that. I get it. I understand. I'm not saying that that doesn't need to happen and that everything we've done for centuries is okay. But I keep thinking back to that speech, and I just think this ruling is just the perfect example of it and how it is just going to change the course of American history forever. And we might not see it now, and we might not see it in some of our lifetimes, but I think it's going to be there forever.
Yeah. Can I just point out, though, that I think one of the biggest reasons why you're seeing that erosion in the faith of government is we have other elected officials who continue to throw our government under the bus, and it just erodes that faith. If you don't believe it and you're the president of the Senate, why would I believe it?
Yeah, but both sides. And I will completely agree with that, because we have the extreme right and the extreme left that we give microphones, and that's who we listen to instead of listening to the legislators that actually want to perform policy and do good things for the American people and Missourians.